This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Beyond the Uniform is committed to helping military veterans succeed in their civilian career. In order to further our mission, we're launching a 2018 pledge drive. But rather than asking for donations, we're asking for reviews. If you have benefited from this show, please pay it forward by leaving us a positive review on Apple Podcast. There's a link in every episode's show notes, or just Google Apple Podcasts Beyond the Uniform, and it's the number one link. Our goal between now and December 31st is to get to 150 reviews. As a way of saying thank you, we're going to pick our favorite review and send you a free copy of every Beyond the Uniform publication. That's Veterans in Consulting and Veterans at Goldman Sachs, two soft cover books, as well as printouts of our five ebooks. More importantly, your review will help us get this show in front of more members of the armed forces and military veterans. Thanks and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. My name is Justin Nasiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 226 with Chris Diaz.
You hear people talk about this military to civilian transition, and I believe that couching it in that way is problematic, as it denotes that this transition is the same for any two individuals. I think that it fails to appreciate the variability of experiences, that description is also rather linear, right? When in reality, some veterans leave the service and they return home. Some veterans will start working right away. Some, like you and I, will go to school. But this perpetual transition highlights that evolving nature of moving from one experience to another.
Well, special thanks to Patrick Killian Anderson from episode number 182 for introducing me to Chris. Chris is a performance coach with prominent companies, including Johnson & Johnson. In this interview, we talk about the psychology of high performers. We talk about perpetual transition and how one's transition from the military is a continuous and ongoing process, not a one-time event. We talk about finding a new purpose after the military and how to build it out of one's own experiences, values, and relationships. We talk about the process of pursuing a PhD and more. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you will find show notes that have a text transcript of this episode, as well as links to every resource we discuss. It also includes a link to iTunes, where you can leave us a positive review and be part of our 2018 pledge drive and our goal to get to 150 reviews on iTunes. Thank you for your support on that. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Chris. Joining me today in Philadelphia is Chris Diaz. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate you having me on.
So for listeners, here's a quick background on Chris. He is a performance coach at Equilibria Leadership Consulting. He is also the co-founder and executive director of Action Tank, which tackles tough problems by harnessing the experiences, skills, and relationships of service-minded citizens to improve the social conditions of their community. He is currently working towards a PhD in clinical psychology, and he serves as a performance coach for the Johnson & Johnson Human Performance Institute. Chris started out in the Navy as a hospital corpsman, where he served for 6 years. And I want to give a special thanks to Patrick Killian Anderson for making the intro. Kill made an intro a while back, and I was fortunate to grab lunch with Chris while he was in town. As you'll learn, he travels quite frequently, but Kill has quite the knack for finding like-minded people to connect together. I really enjoyed getting to know Chris, and excited to have him share some of his story with listeners. So Chris, maybe to start things off, and this might be a complex question, but if you ran into someone who's serving on active duty and they asked you what you do for a living, how would you go about answering that?
Yeah, that's a good one. The reality, Justin, is that I'm consumed with helping people to better understand and improve themselves. So psychology, with its focus on the science of the mind, is the lens which I view all behaviors. So I get to achieve that through, like you mentioned, academic work, through the nonprofit world, with athletes, with the military. And so a performance coach really takes all of these various modalities to help performance, and it just kind of makes them accessible to the end user. In the military, units have implemented what are called cognitive enhancement specialists. So it's something quite similar to that. However, I take a more holistic viewpoint toward performance in the work that I do.
And you know, to give people a sense of performance psychology, what might be an example? Like when you are traveling around and you're working with groups, or maybe even working with individuals, what does that look like? Like how does that play out? Or is there an example or a story you can share to make it more concrete for people?
Sure. So performance psychology refers to the mental components of superior performance. And it's highlighted through situations and performance domains where excellence is a central element. So if you can think of some of those domains, you have athletics, you have the military, you have areas like medicine and surgery. So it's really working with individuals who are looking to gain in their ability to be able to solve problems, in their ability to be able to perform under pressure. So that's how performance psychology is kind of operationalized. In the work that I do, it varies from the team that I'm working with or the individual that I'm working with. For one particular team, this is a men's soccer team. They, at the collegiate level, have a number of challenges based on the amount of hours that coaches can have contact with those players. And so it was up with me working with the coaching staff to develop a leadership team within the team, and then to help magnify the impact that the coach was having on the pitch so that it could extend beyond the field of play into the classroom and into their lives. And so that's one way where performance psychology is really utilized as kind of a force multiplier in a team setting.
I love that. I'm thinking of a couple of years ago, I went to a business conference and Tony Robbins was the speaker. And one of the things he said that stuck with me and really rung true was he said that business is 90% psychology and 10% skills. And, you know, for me, when I look back on my own professional post-military career, I view the biggest challenges I faced, the biggest obstacles, the biggest growths, like all of these things, it was almost always a matter of psychological mindset. It was maybe me viewing a problem a certain way, or me not having faith in myself or in our team. And all of these things that I view as either our biggest successes or our biggest failures, it did kind of boil down to the psychological element and not really that much in the realm of like, did I have a particular skill? And so what I love about what you're doing, you know, whether this is applied directly to athletics or to business, and I imagine the approach is exactly the same, that mindset and someone's mindset and their psychology, I just am a big believer, has the oversized impact on how that person performs or even how they approach their work or their training or whatever they're doing.
It really is this endless field where there are far more questions than we can ever solve. But because every single thought, every single behavior, every single memory that we create and then we recall, every conversation, every skill learn, all of that is done through psychology. And so I would push on those numbers that the esteemed Tony Robbins said. And I'd say that 100% of what humans do comes down to their psychology, because even how we learn skill acquisition and motor learning, those are psychological constructs. What you say about how looking at mindset and how that impacts, whether there's an industry or sport or the military, there's an application for it.
That's awesome. And could you tell us a little bit more about your own transition from the military and what that was like?
Sure. My transition was rather abrupt. I had clarity about the path that I was pursuing. I got out of the Navy on a Friday. I left Camp Lejeune and my Marines and started school on a Monday morning. So there really wasn't much of a clean break or downtime with that transition. Now, while starting as a 30-year-old undergrad, working towards this lofty goal of becoming a clinical psychologist, there've been a lot of ebbs and flows over the years. There have been challenges relating to my health and navigating the VA system. There have been great experiences with connecting with a number of incredible nonprofits. You mentioned one of them, the Pat Tillman Foundation. So my experience of transition is one where I believe is rather common to the experience that many veterans face with coming out. A little bit of uncertainty, maybe a lot of uncertainty, and really just trying to figure it out for myself.
And we were trading emails. You said something about perpetual transition. What do you mean by perpetual transition?
Yeah, you know, I hear people talk about this military to civilian transition, and I believe that couching it in that way is problematic, as it denotes that this transition is the same for any two individuals. I think that it fails to appreciate the variability of experiences, that description is also rather linear, right? When in reality, some veterans leave the service and they return home. Some veterans will start working right away. Some, like you and I, will go to school. But this perpetual transition highlights that evolving nature of moving from one experience to another. So over the course of an entire lifetime, you never actually arrive at a set point. You don't get somewhere. It's this constant evolution that we're going to. And so I believe that understanding that it's a perpetual transition of ever changing and evolving is a more adaptive approach to personal development.
I love that. I think it's so true. And I don't think something someone has mentioned on the show before. I think I'm still wrapping my head around that. I think I'm like very destination oriented. And there's this sense of, you know, arriving at a point where you have achieved or you get it or you figured it out, when in fact, you know, my experience has been much more so what you just described. It's just constantly changing. Like there is no figuring it out. There is no plateau that you arrive at and then everything is worked out. It's just life is always changing. Career is always changing and we are always changing. And I'm reminded of that, of just trying to like check in more frequently with myself to figure out like, okay, what is it at in this moment as I am, you know, I'm a 38-year-old male and about to be a father. What is it in this moment that matters to me from a career standpoint? And I imagine that will change, you know, at least every couple of years, if not more frequently. And I bring it up because I found myself in the position where I was chasing what I once thought was what I wanted. And then when I finally, you know, take the time to think about what I want, it's like, oh, that's not actually what I want at all. And so I love what you're talking about of the perpetual transition. It's not a once and done. It is a continuous process.
Where this process also shows up is in the outpouring of support by individuals wanting to help veterans, right? And so you can't get away from an organization that's hiring X amount of veterans or services being offered to certain veterans. And what leads to oftentimes the conversations I have both locally and people around the nation are that there's a frustration that veterans aren't showing up. And the very reason why I believe that they're not showing up is because they are at a different point in their perpetual transition. So the point that a business may be wanting to hire a veteran may not match up with where that veteran is at that point in time in their life, right? And so it would stand to reason that if there is a disconnect between when somebody wants to hire somebody, when somebody wants to offer a service, and where that veteran is in their own perpetual transition, that if that match doesn't happen, there's not alignment there, then there's going to be services that aren't being utilized, and there's going to be veterans that aren't going to be aware that services are even being offered.
That's awesome. Well, you know, one thing I just thought to ask you is, you know, because you said you kind of ended your service on a Friday, started school on Monday. What was it that drew you to performance psychology or this whole entire field? Because, you know, when we had lunch together, I had the impression that you're in that rare category of people who seem to have stumbled upon a calling. It's not just a job. This is like something that kind of resonates with you on a foundational level. What you're doing seems to like go all the way down to the bedrock of who you are. And I'm curious, you know, for other listeners who aspire to that, I'm not suggesting that everyone should or that's what everyone wants to do, but I'm wondering, like, how did you find out about this? What kind of led you in the path of knowing this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I'll address both points that you made there, Justin. On the first hand, how I became interested in this field is I grew up an athlete, playing sports my entire life, and I recognized how my own mind limited my athletic ability and my ability to perform. So I'd always been kind of piqued with curiosity, and after joining the military, I would see some of my closest friends go out for the special programs, and the guys who made it through BUDS versus those that didn't physically were equal, that there had to be something going on beyond the physical body, but it had to be going on between the ears and the mind. And so that led me to taking a Psych 101 course during my first deployment on the Harry S. Truman CVN-75. And something just clicked where I said, that's it. If I can understand the mind, I'll be able to share that science with others. And it started off with my desire to become, at the time, what I was calling a sports psychologist. What I came to realize, and which you alluded to earlier, is that sport is just one subdiscipline of a much larger umbrella of performance psychology, where military psychology and industrial and organizational psychology also have a role under that umbrella. To speak to your second point, though, about purpose, you are absolutely correct when you say purpose isn't something that you just stumble upon. It's something that you must take ownership and build that meaning into your life. You build that out of your own experiences. You build it out of your own values and out of the relationships with people that you have. I'm reminded of this quote by Howard Thurman, which says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and do that, because the world needs is people who have come alive. I think that kind of sums it up.
I think that's so great. I had heard that at a meditation retreat. I didn't realize, I just wrote down, that was Howard Thurman that said that?
That is correct.
Okay. I didn't realize it was a quote. I like someone said that. I'm like, that person's a genius. That's like what she had said was like, you know, the world needs more people alive. Like, because at the time I was trying to figure out what to do in my career. And you know, I think what she was getting at for me is like, quit trying to figure out what you should do. Like what makes you feel really alive and do that. The world needs more people who are fully alive rather than you pursuing something that you think you should do or doing it out of obligation. And I love the power behind that. And I like those three things that you articulated of finding that purpose out of your experiences, out of your values, and out of your relationships. Those seem like three good scaffolds to look to figure out that sort of purpose and uncover it from your own experience, values, and relationships.
What you pick up for me when you mention that there is something foundational about what I'm doing is because there is alignment across my life. I wouldn't be able to do the amount of different things that I'm doing if there wasn't tied to one higher purpose. And so because I've been able to look and recognize the benefits of figuring out what works for me, that's what makes me alive. And I'm glad to hear that that's something that comes across even in a short lunch conversation that we had.
That's awesome. And for listeners kind of energized by all of this, I did a recent interview. It's episode 223. I'll add it in the show notes. But I talked with Peter Docker, who works with the Start With Why, I think Foundation or Start With Why Company, but it's Simon Sinek, who did a famous TED Talk around finding your why. I think it's kind of in a similar vein of what Chris is saying of, you know, you get a lot more leverage if you can uncover the foundational reason behind what you want to do. And it's just a kind of another angle on what we're talking about if you're enjoying this. What about, you know, we started to touch on this, but I wanted to make a little bit more space, is talking about finding one's purpose. And the reason I ask it is that in the 220 plus interviews I've done, one of the common threads that I've heard from military veterans is there is a moment of finding a new identity and a new purpose after military service, and that things seem to be very clear cut. They had a very clear objective. They derived a lot of value from protecting their country, for serving, for making a sacrifice. It met a lot of different needs. And then a lot of times when they transition, there's a bit of a vacuum. And a lot of people, and I would relate to this, struggle to figure out what their new purpose is and to figure out what role that purpose plays in their job. And I'm just kind of curious if you have any thoughts on how someone listening might start to uncover what their purpose might be after their military service.
So some of my earlier research in my master's program was on looking at the risk factors for suicide, particularly in a sample of combat veterans. The researchers really mixed about what were some of the causes for the statistics that are so often reported. And one of the key areas of opportunity that served as both a risk factor and protective factor, so when it was not there, it was risk, when it was there, was social support and sense of purpose. Those two things really aligned. So what you mentioned is so often happens with us leaving the military, is we lose that sense of belonging and that sense of why we were doing what we were doing. And part of why we started this nonprofit in Philadelphia, Action Tank, was precisely because we wanted to allow other veterans to continue to gain fulfillment through continued service in their community. Because we know the research is clear about what the impact potentially for a person's life and their well-being and fulfillment is gained through having that purpose. You or I, in this course of this podcast, won't be able to give that to somebody. And I know that's not your point. What I do encourage people to do is to go to their community, to go to those relationships, and to find out what it is, again, from your experiences, your values, your relationships that make you feel alive, and then go do that.
That's great. Another thought that occurred to me is, you know, listeners, there's probably some listeners who may want to go down the, what I would call the Olympics of education path that you're going down of obtaining a PhD. Could you speak a little bit about what that process is like, and in particular, kind of what the day-to-day life looks like as you're working towards a PhD?
Yeah, I'd say that this life is a difficult one, but that probably isn't necessary to articulate. If I had known what was going to be required of me when I started, I probably would not have set out. So it was a good thing that I was naive. The process in this particular field is one where fraught with a lot of just exploration and figuring things out on your own. So the field of performance psychology is one that's only now being built within the last 20 plus years. So there are very few programs in the country, in the world, quite frankly, that offer dedicated paths. And so what I've had to do is I've focused my educational path in clinical psychology with an emphasis on human performance. And so I'm learning really, I think, both sides of the continuum of the human experience, both the pathological and then those things that are considered more positive psychology or strength-based psychological constructs. If you're interested in pursuing this, please, I'm happy to have you reach out. You can add, you know, my information in the show notes, because there's no one path that's tailor-made. It really does involve the level of your willingness to travel, the level of your willingness to endure many, many, many years of schooling and education. But for those individuals that gain fulfillment from it, I can't, I absolutely love what I'm learning. I love what I'm getting to do. And yes, I'm looking forward to being done with this phase in my own development. However, it's something that I wouldn't trade for the world.
I would love to know kind of the worst part or the most challenging part of your work. The anecdote I always fall back on is a good friend of mine at the time was working towards his PhD, and he described, you know, his day, and he was like, you know, I'll read for a while, I'm researching something, and then I'll go for a walk for a few hours and just think about it and then come back and then write. And for me, you know, I'm kind of an extreme. I love execution. I love just putting my heads down and doing things, and doing is like such a big part. When he described his process, it was like, man, I understand that probably helps him internalize information and learn and grow. And for me, I would be like so pent up about like on that walk, oh, like I got to be doing something else. And he'd be sitting and reading and he'd be doing. So for me, when he described it, like that would be the hardest part for me, the challenge of just the wilderness that you have to seem to just go through without any roadmap and just kind of becoming a world-class expert on a very, very specific thing. But I'm curious for you, you know, what has been that most challenging aspect, the hardest part or the worst part of this career path with pursuing a PhD?
Whether or not it's the worst part, I'm not sure. But certainly one of the challenges that I've had is that there are not many first-generation American combat veteran, 30-year-old male, former MMA fighters walking around the halls of academia, right? Those are just a few of the monikers that, you know, I kind of carry with me. And so lacking an actual mentor who looks like me, who has the experiences that I've had, has been incredibly difficult. I started off in this program with my peers who were Ivy League educated individuals. When I left the Navy, the longest email that I had ever sent in my life was maybe 6 sentences. So the learning curve that I had to overcome is something that I'm still dealing with, right? To become that subject matter expert, like you mentioned, at least within clinical psychology, it requires that you become an expert at research. It requires that you become an expert at teaching. It requires you to become an expert at clinical work and in the publications of that research and clinical work that you're doing. So there are all of these domains in which you have to become an expert at in an incredibly short window of time. And those are just some of the challenges that I've had and can, like I said, continue to face in the program.
That's great. And I know we didn't really touch directly on your work with Johnson & Johnson. I'm not sure to the extent to which you can talk about that, but could you just share a little bit more about what that work looks like and just, what that experience has been like?
The experience has been incredible working with the Johnson & Johnson Human Performance Institute. So Johnson & Johnson has a mission to become the healthiest workforce in the world. It's actually led by a veteran, right? Our CEO is Alex Gorsky, a West Point grad. And so being part of an organization that values my military service and also values the importance of having a workforce that is valued, that does prioritize health and well-being is incredibly rewarding. My work as a performance coach really is to go out and work with people both internally in J&J and externally, the number of Fortune, you know, 100 companies, with nonprofits, with these companies and organizations that are trying to build their awareness and capacity to be able to have more energy and more fulfilled lives.
That's awesome. And I would love to learn about, I always like to try and touch on resources, especially thinking of someone listening who might be overseas or on a ship or deployed, and just trying to tease out something that they might be able to act on today to further themselves or their professional career post-military. And so I'm wondering if there's any resources, and by that I mean books or podcasts or conferences, websites, whatever it might be, that has helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to listeners.
One recommendation that I'd have to make is to go to the books, to pour over a variety of sources when you're reading. That is one of the greatest sources of information. And then what I've managed to do is, if I read a book, I'll reach out to the author and ask if they have any recommendations of something that they would recommend me, you know, to read. One particular podcast that I don't mind referencing is by one of my mentors. His name is Dr. Michael Gervais. His podcast is called Finding Mastery. There are incredible guests that are on there, for Olympians, military operators, CEOs. So I would definitely recommend checking out Finding Mastery if you're interested in more about how performance psychology works.
Awesome. And I'll add that to the show notes. I'm going to actually check that out. Finding Mastery sounds great. There's something appealing about that. I just watched that documentary Free Solo about Alex Honnold's climb of El Cap in Yosemite. And there's that, I imagine this appeals to many veterans, and but that thought of like just completely mastering something, and that to me, the thought of climbing something so incredibly challenging without any rope or safety net is the epitome of mastery. And so I'll check out Finding Mastery, and I'll put that link in the show notes for listeners.
Alex is actually previously on his podcast as well, so you'll appreciate that.
Oh, no. I've been watching like little YouTube clips. I'm on a Alex Honnold fanboy campaign right now, so that I'll check that out. I always like to end on an open-ended question, which is, what have we not talked about today that you want to make sure that you share with listeners before we wrap up?
Don't allow yourself to be defined by your service or any other title someone wants to hold over you. I'd encourage everyone to give yourself the space to listen for your authentic voice and then follow it.
I love it. I love it. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time today. I appreciate Kill connecting us, and thank you for sharing your story with the Beyond the Uniform audience.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.